And here's the truth. When you're negotiating with billing offices or even office managers, it doesn't have to be scary. Ultimately, these professionals, these companies want to be paid, and they are willing to work with you to ensure that they receive a payment, because the other option is they don't get paid at all, and they don't want that to happen either. Hey, this is Allison, and welcome to the Inspire Budget Podcast, where we talk all things budgeting, debt, and saving money. Today, I'm diving into how I learned how to negotiate medical bills for less than you owe, yes, even after insurance kicks in. So if you're in the United States, then you're going to have to eventually deal with the annoyance that is medical bills. I know all of the Canadians here listening, you can just stop, because I know that you guys love your healthcare system. And while the United States healthcare system does have its flaws, we have to deal with it. There's going to eventually come a time whenever someone has an unexpected injury, someone ends up in the hospital unexpectedly. So while you might not be facing medical bills now, this is so important to learn about, because you will eventually face them. It's going to happen. And many people don't know that you can actually negotiate your medical bills down even after insurance pays its part. The key, though, that I'm going to tell you, if you take anything away from this, well, really, there's a lot to take away, but the main thing is that having cash in hand to pay off these medical bills gives you leverage and power in this situation. And that's because doctors' offices don't always know if they're going to get paid or if some of the bills that they have out are going to end up in collections. And so what happens is when you offer them to settle with cash in hand, meaning you have money in savings that you can use to pay off these bills, then they are sometimes willing to allow you to have a discount so they get the money right then and there. And this is why having an emergency fund is so important. And while we might not have enough in an emergency fund to cover every single medical bill that maybe comes our way, especially if it's a very, very, very large bill, it is still so important because it gives you power. It gives you leverage. It gives you power. So let's talk about exactly how we learned this, unfortunately, the hard way. When my youngest son was just 3 years old, he got what we thought was a stomach bug. On one Sunday morning after church, he threw up, and I just thought it was a normal virus. I was a teacher at the time. My husband was a teacher, and we played rock, paper, scissors to see who was going to stay home on Monday, as we always did, who had to call in a sub, all the things. So my husband ended up staying home on Monday with our sick son, and I took my other son to school with me, and I went to work. When I got home on Monday, my husband said that he had thrown up maybe once or twice more, he was running a fever, and that I would have to take off the next day. So I put in for a sub to take off the next day, tried to get some fluids in his system. He wasn't eating or drinking. And I noticed when he went to the bathroom that his urine was a darker color. So I was concerned about him getting enough, basically, water in his system. I was concerned about dehydration. My husband decided to go to bed because he needed to go to work the next day, and I decided to stay up and actually work on Inspire Budget stuff. This is after I had launched Inspire Budget, and so I knew I was going to have an easy day the next day staying home with my son. So I stayed up late in the living room working on some business things, some blog articles, whatever. Well, my oldest son and my youngest son at the time shared a room, and I told my husband, I said, just have our oldest son, Evan, sleep in bed with you, and I'll sleep in that room with James, our youngest son, who was sick, just so that way Evan didn't catch the virus. That was our thinking. We don't want Evan to get sick as well, so let's separate them. Around 11:30, I went in to go to bed, and I decided to check on my son. And when I sat down next to him, he was sleeping. I put my hand on his head. He was warm, and I put my hand over his chest, and I remember his heart was beating so wildly. I mean, just so out of control. It was going so fast. And I'm not a medical professional. My extent of medical knowledge stems from Grey's Anatomy. So I didn't really know, but something in my gut was telling me something's off. So I went and I decided to time how fast his heart rate was beating. And his heart rate was beating like 180 beats per minute resting. He was dead asleep. So I called my mom and I said, Mom, what do I do? I don't know what to do. What do I do? Is this normal? This doesn't feel normal. I was Googling all these things. And she said, he's likely dehydrated. You need to take him to the hospital and get some IV fluids in him. I said, okay. I went and I woke my husband up. I said, look, I'm going to take him just out of precaution to the hospital right down the street, get him some IV fluids. We'll be back in the morning. You go back to sleep. It'll be good. So we get to the hospital. I carry him in with a blanket and they hook us up. And immediately they say he's not dehydrated. That's not the problem. They gave him a popsicle. They checked everything, checked his blood work. And they said, we need to do an ultrasound. I was like, no, I really don't think you need to. And in my mind, right, I was seeing like these dollar signs come up because we had actually paid off our debt. This happened in February. We became debt-free in August. We had just hit our $15,000 emergency fund. That was our goal, $15,000. We had $15,000 saved, thankfully. And I was seeing all these dollar signs. And I was like, no, it's just a virus. They said, no, we need to do an ultrasound. So they did an ultrasound. And the ultrasound basically came back inconclusive. But a doctor came in and she said to me, and by this time, my son was in a lot of pain. He was moaning. And remember, he's three. So all he could really tell me was that his tummy hurt. He couldn't tell us really anything more. So she said, you need to go to the children's hospital. We have an ambulance. We're going to put both of you on the ambulance and you're going to go to the children's hospital because something's not right. We're really concerned. So we made it on the ambulance. We arrived at the Children's Medical City Children's Hospital in Dallas, which is amazing, at around 4 o'clock in the morning. We get to the hospital, we get in, and we're just basically in this waiting space. By about 6 a.m., my husband was there with my older son. So I said, let's take him to school. He doesn't need to be here all day while we're dealing with this. So my husband actually drove the 45 minutes back, took my older son to school, and during that time while he was gone, James had a CAT scan. So they gave him this liquid that he drank and it basically lit up everything, all of his intestines, all the things, I guess, and they could see it. So he had a CAT scan and they found that his appendix, I don't know if they had realized then it had ruptured, but they knew, okay, he has appendicitis. He has appendicitis. He's going to need his appendix removed. Well, hospitals aren't always on your own timetable. They don't always go at the rate you want them to go. So we waited around for several hours. My husband came back. My mom, goodness gracious, love her, drove up 5.5 hours to help us out because we knew we would be there for a couple of days. We were hoping just maybe 2 or 3 days in the hospital. By the time the surgeon was really able to look at the CAT scans, though, we had been admitted to a room. We were admitted to a room in the non-infectious surgical wing. So we were in this wing of the hospital with all of these cancer patients because they had just had surgery to have tumors removed and they were non-infectious. And since James's appendicitis couldn't be caught by someone, we were admitted to this wing of the hospital. We were sitting there and my husband had actually driven back up 45 minutes away to pick my son up from school and come back to the hospital. And while he was on his way back or parking, a whole bunch of nurses walked in and they said, he needs to go now. The doctor just looked at his scans. He needs to go now. And I was like, what? What do you mean? My husband's not here. Like, can we talk about this first? They said, no. And they immediately took the sheets that he was laying on, lifted him up on this stretcher, and we started leaving the room. And I called my husband and I said, you need to hurry. We're going to surgery now. They are not waiting. They said, we cannot wait for you. He needs to go in now. And my son wasn't allowed in the wing of the hospital because it was flu season and they didn't want anyone coming up that was under the age of 12 that might have the flu. So my mom ran downstairs to watch Evan. Matt ran up. He's running down the hallway. We're going very quickly down the hallway with these nurses. They take us to the pre-op area where we were able to see him off very briefly, and he went into surgery. Looking back, I don't remember how long he was there. It was very scary, but the doctor came out and said his appendix had ruptured. His entire abdomen was filled with infection, just this infected liquid had filled his entire abdomen. Some of his organs weren't working. They were frozen. So what happens is when the infection reaches the organs, they basically shut down because they're just freaked out, right? The organs. This is my non-medical explanation of what I gathered. And he said, I tried to remove as much of the infection as I could. I couldn't get it all. You're going to be here for many weeks. You're going to be here for a long time, 3, 4, 5 weeks long. And he said, it's really bad. He said, your son's condition, his state was really bad. So we went back to our room. we met him there, and he was on a feeding tube. He was on an NG tube. He was on morphine around the clock, and he pretty much just laid there. They were concerned about him getting sepsis in his blood and getting really sick that way. But we knew at that moment that this wasn't going to be a two-night stay at the hospital. This was a big, big deal because the appendix ruptured and his entire abdomen was infected. So anyway, basically, long story short, we had a lot of people praying for us. He ended up making an incredible recovery at a very rapid pace. In fact, one of the nurses had even said she's never seen someone's levels increase so dramatically, so quickly. He was able to have the NG tube taken out and he healed. We were there for about a week. So we have been to two hospitals, one ambulance ride, actually two surgeries. He had to go under two times in anesthesia. He had to go under to get a PICC line put in his arm as well. And it was exhausting. And not only was it exhausting, it was expensive. During that time, though, in the hospital, I felt at peace because I wasn't necessarily worried about the money. I didn't know if we had enough money to pay all the medical bills, but I wasn't worried because I knew we had some money. And after about 2 months, the medical bills flowed in. And when they first started coming in, all I did was I took them and I put them in a binder. And I literally had a binder that was, I think I labeled it hospital bills. And I knew I just want to collect them all. I just want to collect them all and make sure everything is correct before I sit down to deal with this. And so that's what I did. And it wasn't until April that we actually received what we thought were the rest of the bills. It actually wasn't, but what we thought were the rest of our medical bills from everyone. And we could compare them to the insurance statements and we could actually start paying them. And my mom, thank goodness, told me that you can actually negotiate medical bills for less than you owe, which was news to me. I just assumed you had to pay it. I assumed what they told you was due was what you had to pay. But she works in the medical field and she said, no, you can actually negotiate if you can pay right away. You can ask for discounts. So that's what we did. I learned from trial and error. And because I had so many different medical bills from different doctors and different hospitals, and I was able to practice many times and create a script that I'm going to be sharing with you today about how to negotiate medical bills. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about how to negotiate medical bills before treatment. Now, clearly, we were not in the situation where we could negotiate the cost of all of this before his treatment began because it was an emergency. But sometimes there are going to be surgeries that take place where you know in advance that they're going to happen. He actually had a surgery when he was 2, and we knew well in advance that it was going to happen. So here are 3 tips for how to negotiate medical bills before treatment. The first is to search for someone that is in network. You want to be able to find a doctor that is in network in your area. Sometimes when we were thrown into this emergency situation, we ended up having to pay out of network costs on some things because we didn't have a choice. But when you know in advance and you're negotiating beforehand, you can choose someone that's in network. The second tip is to shop around for a doctor. One smart thing you can do is to actually call and ask them what their rates are. You can even do this for simple urgent care visits. You can provide your insurance information in advance and just ask them how much you're going to owe. Not only will this help you find a doctor that you're comfortable with, but it'll actually, you'll find someone that possibly fits into your budget as well. And the third tip is to negotiate with a doctor or office manager. Probably not the doctor, but mostly the office manager. One thing to know is that if you're going to have a baby, and we actually did this when we had children, is if you're going to have a baby, you can meet with the billing person at your doctor's office in person and negotiate a payment plan or a pay in full option. Ask for a discount for paying in full if you know you're going to have a baby. And here's the truth. When you're negotiating with billing offices or even office managers, it doesn't have to be scary. Ultimately, these professionals, these companies want to be paid, and they are willing to work with you to ensure that they receive a payment because the other option is they don't get paid at all, and they don't want that to happen either. Today's episode is brought to you by the Budgeting Basics email course. If you're new to budgeting or if you need a refresher, then this free email course is for you. I'll walk you through exactly how to write a budget you can stick to. You'll also get access to my free resource library where I have a collection of free printables to help you get your finances organized once and for all. Sign up by clicking the link in the show notes below. It's 100% free and might just be the thing you've been looking for. So let's talk about negotiating bills after a treatment. Maybe there was an emergency like our family situation and you're wondering, well, how do I deal with that? Especially if some of them are out of network, especially if I didn't get a choice, and especially if I just had to say, okay, do what you need to do to keep my family healthy, right? So let's talk exactly about the four options that are available to you that you can do to negotiate after treatment. The first is to double check that all your bills are accurate. No one's perfect. No one is perfect. And I can guarantee you these insurance companies, these hospitals, they are not perfect either. So ask for an itemized receipt or EOB explanation of benefits. Check every EOB, check everything. We found that we were actually double charged sometimes. And that's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. But when you're able to call and bring it to someone's attention, then they should be able to fix it rather quickly. So always the first thing you want to do before you even pay anything is to double check that all of your bills are accurate. The second is to actually ask for a pay in full discount. So once you know that, and we're going to talk about how to do this, I want you to actually call and ask them for a discount. So before you pick up the phone, though, you have to do the math to see what you're willing to pay. And this is where having cash in hand helps, because these people get paid right away instead of hoping you're going to pay on a payment plan, or instead of hoping you're going to pay and the bill gets sent to collections. Most places, and I say most because there have been places I've worked with, offices I've worked with, where they did not offer a discount. They had a no discount policy. And sometimes we just can't work around that. But most places are willing to offer a 20% discount on your bill if you ask or if you pay in full. They'll say, oh, we offer a 20% discount. They just don't advertise it. They don't tell people about it. You have to ask. However, from my experience when I was calling all of these places, is I was like, why only 20? And so I decided, hey, it doesn't hurt to ask for a deeper discount, because sometimes when I would ask for a 40% discount, they would actually pay it. They would say, yes, well, you can have this 40% discount. They would grant me that discount. So have an idea of knowing what your bill is, do the math, calculate the discount you want, and ask for that discount, or tell them how much you can pay. And what this does is it puts you in the position to knowing in advance what your goal is, so that way you can offer them a solution, right? Their problem is they have a bill that they want paid. Your solution is how you are going to pay this bill. Now, if you do ask for a 35 or 40% discount and they say, no, we only offer a 20% discount, it's still a discount. So I say, go for 40%, ask for a 40% discount. I've personally received up to 40% discount on a medical bill after insurance paid their part. So insurance pays their part and I still got 40% off. So let's pretend you have a $1,000 medical bill. Comes in $1,000, easy number. To calculate a 35% discount, you would simply multiply $1,000 by 0.35, then subtract that amount from the original bill, which means the discount would be $350, which means the amount you would want to pay is $650. So when you call, you tell them, I want to pay $650 today and pay the bill in full. So the benefit of doing the math before you call is ensuring that you're getting as big of a discount as possible, because they might not be calculating that discount in their head. So here's the exact script that I would use, that I created after calling all of these places. Here's how it goes. Hi, I'm calling in reference to my bill. I see here that the balance is blank, but I can pay you blank today and settle the bill as a $0 balance. So let's insert that $1,000 bill with the discount. So the way that would work is you would say, hi, I'm calling in reference to my bill. I see that the balance is $1,000, but I can pay you $650 today and settle the bill as a $0 balance. I use this exact script 10 places that year, 10 places whenever it came to negotiating my son's hospital bills down, and only two of them refused to settle. So I say start by offering 40 to 50% discount, calculating that, and see what they will do to work with you. You're going to want to get a confirmation number though, maybe even in writing. What I did was I had a binder. I wrote down the name of the person I was talking to, the date I talked to them, a confirmation, a phone number to call back, and I actually asked them to send me an email confirmation as well. Many times I actually paid over the phone right then and there while I had that yes, especially if I was talking to an office manager, but you can always ask them to send you a new invoice before you pay your bill. Just to refresh, when it comes to negotiating bills after treatment, first you want to double check that all your bills are accurate. Next, you want to ask for a pay in full discount, which if you have the cash on hand and you can do that, it gives you leverage, it gives you power when it comes to negotiating. Then let's say you don't. Let's say you do not have that cash in hand. You can always try setting up a payment plan. If you can't negotiate your bills in full, then you can try to set up a payment plan. They usually have a 0% interest rate with hospitals, which is great. You just have to be sure to get everything in writing and stay current on your payments, and then you can set up a payment plan. But typically what I have found is if you set up a payment plan, they will not negotiate your rate down. You'll have to pay the full balance over time. Or what I've also found out is that if you already have a payment plan in place, it's really difficult for you to go back and negotiate after that. So it's really smart to have all of your kind of ducks in a row, know everything that you need to know about your bills before you move forward with negotiating or setting up a payment plan. And finally, if you happen to have a lower income, most hospitals, in fact, I think all hospitals, have a financial assistance program that will help cover part or even all of the costs of hospital bills for those with a lower income. In many cases, the bills are greatly reduced, but you're going to have to qualify, which means you're going to want to call the billing department and ask about the financial assistance program and see if you actually qualify. When it comes to negotiating medical bills, whether you're doing it beforehand or afterwards in case of an emergency, right, there are a couple of tips I want you to remember that are going to just help you out during this process. The first is to keep track of everything. If you're in a situation like our family was, where we had a lot of bills coming in all at one time and they were very expensive, I had a binder and a list. I kept track of every single bill, when it was due, who I talked to, because I wanted to make sure that I was doing my part to negotiate and pay less for those bills. So to be able to do that, I needed to be organized. So keep yourself organized. And also, this does work on even just simple urgent care visits. I know my husband has gone to the urgent care and it was maybe $200 and he negotiated it down to be $150. So side note, this does work for smaller bills as well. Another tip is to be kind and polite. I know it goes without saying that when you're trying to negotiate any bill down, the kinder you are, the further you will get. People on the other end of the phone, typically, if they're answering the phone for a billing department or an office manager, they typically deal with unhappy people most of the day. And the other person on that line is a person. So speak nicely, use a polite tone, and they will be more likely to work with you. My third tip is to call the office manager if you have to. Many of these doctor's offices actually hire out third-party billing departments. So what that means is when you call about your bill, you're not actually talking to anyone inside that office. It's a contractor that's been hired out, a company that's been hired out. And those people don't usually have the authority to offer any discounts, or maybe they only have the authority to offer a 10 or 20% discount. There was one situation years ago whenever I was paying all of these bills that I called and spoke with the billing department and they said, no, but I was adamant. I was like, no, listen, I have all of these bills. I need you to work with me. I can pay you in full. And they kept saying no. So I called my mom out of frustration and she's the one who told me, see, my mom is brilliant. She's the one who told me that these offices sometimes hire these third-party billing departments, and her suggestion was to call the office manager instead. So instead of calling the number on the bill that I was given, I actually opened up Google Maps, pulled up the doctor's office phone number, and asked to speak to an office manager, and she lowered my bill by 35% right on the spot, right away, didn't even think about it, 35%. I used the script. I said, hello, I know I owe you $1,154.95. I'm willing to settle today in full for $750 over the phone. She took about 15 seconds to respond. Okay, we can do that. So it's incredible sometimes if you just call the right person, you might get a deeper discount. And my last tip for you is to just be honest and upfront. Tell them that you want to pay what you owe, but that you can only pay a certain amount. Tell them that you have a lot of bills in, or you can make this payment and settle it in full. And let them know that you're trying to do your best to get ahead of your bills and finances because you don't want these bills to go to collections. Before we close up this episode, I do want to share one thing to avoid when it comes to negotiating medical bills. And this is something I see happen so often. And it's whenever a bill arrives, you get overwhelmed and you just leave it alone. Maybe you stick it in a pile that just grows on your counter and you completely forget about it. Or you stick it in a basket and you say, I'm going to deal with this later, and you end up ignoring it. Or maybe worse, you toss it in the trash. So don't do that when it comes to negotiating medical bills. Keep track of them, put them in a binder, deal with them, because you don't want them to ultimately go to collections. At the end of every solo episode, I love to answer one question from Instagram. This one was sent in by Marketing by Ida, and she says, how do you keep up your morale when you fall off the wagon? And she's talking about falling off the wagon with budgeting and saving money. And here's the deal. This is totally normal. It is so common to get off track, to lose motivation. I don't know any person that stays motivated 100% of the time, but it's also important to have a couple of tips or tricks or hacks up your sleeve for how to re-motivate yourself whenever you know you want to reach these money goals, but you just kind of stopped caring a little bit. So here are three things that I like to do when I fall off the wagon, so to speak, and I want to get back on. The first thing I do is I set smaller goals. I find that when I have a huge, massive goal when it comes to my money, that it just feels overwhelming and I don't want to deal with it. It feels almost unattainable. So what I do instead is I set smaller monthly and weekly goals, because when I have those goals, while I might not reach all of them, if I reach one of them, I get that little burst of motivation that, hey, I'm doing what I need to do. I'm making progress. This is going to be okay. So setting smaller goals, whether it is to have 3 no spend days, or maybe your goal is to pay all of your bills on time, or maybe your goal is to just eat at home 6 days that week, because you know you tend to overspend whenever you go out to dinner, and that will ultimately save you money by eating at home. Set 3 smaller goals that will allow you to see a win when it comes to your money and get that motivation back to jump back into budgeting, paying off debt, saving money, and investing. My second tip is to surround yourself with people that are doing what you want to do. Now, that's so easy to do these days with social media on Instagram. Start following people in your feed that are motivating you to budget, motivating you to save money, motivating you to pay off debt, people that inspire you, and start muting or unfollowing those that make you feel less than or that make you want to spend money. Maybe you're following some influencers that are constantly selling whether it's clothing or teeth whitening toothpaste or whatever it is, unfollow or mute those people so that way you can fill your social media feed with people that are influencing you to do better with your money. My third tip to keep up your morale when you fall off the wagon is to actually just complete a money reset. What this looks like is just writing a new budget, tracking your spending, and resetting your focus. Instead of focusing on how you have been overspending or how you went back into debt or how you feel out of control, have a moment in time that says, okay, starting now, in this moment, I am resetting my focus. I'm going to write my 3 goals, I'm going to write my budget, and I'm going to start tracking my spending and my progress from this moment on. Every now and then, that's just what our mind needs when it comes to focusing on our goals. And sometimes it's what our body needs when it comes to food we're eating. So resetting, having this reset moment where you almost redeclare your goals, you refocus your energy, it allows you to get motivated and back on track with your money. Thank you, Marketing by Ida, for sending in that question. I know that you're not the only person that struggles with this. In fact, I think that this can help so many people. Ultimately, I hope that this episode helps you live your best life and reach your money goals. If you enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me for you to just leave a rating or review on Apple iTunes. It's free also to follow and subscribe to the podcast. I will see you next Thursday. Bye for now.